time and be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist. Joey B has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today on my series, Environmental Issues, the topic is invasive species, preserving the home court. Many times I discuss about protecting and preserving habitats. It's usually in reference to loss of habitat. Today I will speak about preserving our native species. As an environmental scientist, I have researched non-native species on the sagebrush steppe out in Idaho. During this show, we'll tackle both plants and animals that are currently causing problems in many ecosystems across this country. Often we develop controls, but many times they're only controls. They're controls of an organism, but not the solution. Most invasive species are introduced by man. For example, over 100 years ago, wealthy people brought over from Europe mute swans to ornate their ponds. Some of these ponds were man-built ponds. For a few of them now, there are mute swans all over the country. And you go, all right, so what's the big deal about a big white bird? And sometimes people look at them and say, oh, big white beautiful bird, wingspan of over 7 feet long. Well, I'll give you an example. About 5-6 years ago, at a friend's house, beautiful home on the lake, we're out paddling in the kayaks around, just, you know, touring a few friends. And I decide, you know, because we always branch off a little bit, I decide to make a turn and go down this little cove, not knowing that there is a family. There is the drake, the male, the hen, and the cygnets, the babies. They're all there on the shore. Well, the male sees me, and he comes, and this is not an exaggeration. He comes flying from, he's on a beach, flying about 1 foot above the water, and you could actually hear his wings hitting, boom, boom, and his wings are hitting the water, and I'm telling you, look at this monstrous bird. And I've got one of my cameras, so I'm just filming. And then I realize this guy is going to crash into me. I'm saying he's this close now. And I sort of just like brace myself. If he hit me, he would have broken my back, because I'm saying he was coming that fast, that forceful. He hits my kayak, bang, and he hits it full, like head on. And again, he was doing what he thought he should be doing, is defending his territory. I don't fault him for that. And in an instant, he swings around and he is literally my paddle's length away, because I'm paddling out, and he's right next to it, and he puffs himself up. And he looked beautiful, by the way, but he puffs himself up, show that he's larger, and he escorted me out of that cove. And I'm telling you now, I am completely out of the cove. I'm paddling and he's still escorting me, and I'm now at least maybe 100, 150 yards away. And I figure, well, hey, I'm far enough away from his family, I could just paddle a little quicker, catch up my friends. I begin to paddle away, and after about 20 seconds, I hear, thump, thump, and he starts to, again, he flies as fast and as hard as he can, and he hits the back of my kayak again. And I'm going, this has to hurt. But again, he was willing to protect his family that way. So we often don't think about, you know, mute swans as being an invasive species. Yes, they are. That's the story. I'm going to tell you right now, a serious story, but there are more invasive species that we will discuss today. But this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. Here's an example of nature causing an invasive species problem, because many times before I said, you know, humans, and I will get into many other human examples. Here's the woolly adelgid, which is an insect from Asia. Now think about how crazy this one sounds. We believe the woolly adelgid, this insect, which attacks eastern hemlocks, the Pseudotsuga canadensis for you botanists out there, we believe that it got blown here in a hurricane. And it is, again, the battle, it killed off many of the eastern hemlocks, and there's a resilience, and some of the eastern hemlocks have battled back from this, but it's this constant battle. But think about this. An invasive species gets gets blown from one continent to another continent. It has no natural enemies here, and that's why it was free to multiply. So that therein becomes a problem. And that is a problem, and I will discuss that more with not having native, hey, there's nothing to battle because, hey, I've never seen before. I don't know if you taste good. And sort of that's what nature is about. So to prove that point, let's head down on to the Everglades in Florida. There's now an invasive species problem that can only be controlled with a population of Burmese pythons, and they are growing at an alarming rate. Because of this ecosystem, which, by the way, is one of the coolest on our continent, but it makes it so difficult to root out the problem. And because they're at the top of the food chain, they don't have any predators. You know, they don't even eat alligators. Sometimes they have been witnessed eating alligators. So think about this. The guy that we think is the top of the food chain down there is not anymore. And this population of Burmese pythons is growing because they can grow up to, then watch this, up to 24 feet plus or minus and weigh about 200 pounds. And they are producing at an alarming rate. A female can give birth to 100 young. I know that scientists, they hypothesize how they were introduced, but more important, it's imperative to control this population. In Florida, there are removal agents, hunters, scientists, and even some police departments have special invasive species control officers now. And they even have had hunts down there where they're offering almost, it's almost like a bounty system because there are that many pythons there. A key problem, the Burmese python can live in all areas from the wild to heavily populated areas. People find pythons in their backyards. Hey, this is a serious deal. And once again, because the Everglades is so dense with the actual ecosystem, you know, water, swamps, it's so difficult to get in there and root out the problem. So now let's discuss some of my research out in the sagebrush steppe out in Idaho. I was working at the U.S. Sheep Station, which is a 90,000-acre government-owned ranch. This is one of my favorite places on earth. You're at the top of the Rockies, and here's a real cool thing. You're at the top of the Rockies, and the sagebrush steppe is actually a desert. So just imagine the Rocky Mountains going up and up and up and up, and then they level off, and they level off, and there's a desert up there. It is one of the more beautiful areas that, you know, I've been from, you know, coast to coast here in our country, and whether it's research or filming. If you ever want to see any of my adventures, you can go to joeyb.tv and check them all out. You know, and here's one of the coolest stories out there. You're on a desert, so you're watching a rainstorm come over a peak of the Rocky Mountains, and you can actually see the storm coming. You see the clouds, the cumulonimbus clouds, like moving in quickly. And as they're moving in, you could actually see the rain, and you're seeing huge drops come down. And by the time it gets on top of you, the drops are actually evaporating. You're looking up and seeing it rain, but it never hits you. Really an amazing thing. Well, here's one of the research projects that we were working on. A couple years back, there was a severe fire in Montana, and much of the grazing land was burnt. So they needed a tremendous amount of hay for their livestock. So the farmers in New Mexico shipped hay up north. As it passed through Idaho, a few of the plant species had dropped some of their seeds. And this is just natural, but it's getting blown off the trucks, and that's not natural. So these plants quickly grew, and they outcompeted, and this becomes a problem with plants, outcompeting. They outcompeted the native plants. They were, and I've seen this, they quickly covered the sides of some of the Rockies. And I'm saying, you could look up the side of the Rocky Mountains and see a specific color, and you know, you're identifying the plant by looking there. So you literally see the entire side of a Rockies covered. So it was a scientist's job, of which I am one of them, to create biological controls for this problem. So you see, I'm on a sheep and cattle ranch, and you know, it's funny that we actually would hire college students to sit there, and you would actually, I guess it's a cool summer job, you're getting paid for it, and they would do bite counts, and they would actually watch the sheep or the cattle and see which plants they would, you know, eat, and so we'd say they'd bite into them, and they would track, and there are specific plants that weren't native to the area, some of these seeds that were growing there, plants that were growing, and they would not eat them. So if they're not eating them and they're reproducing, then obviously they're going to be, it's going to be easy to outcompete them. So one of the unique solutions was one of the vets on staff, and he was creating a population of sheep. And I thought this was one of the cool things that I worked on this. And the population of sheep, they didn't like a specific plant. So what he was doing was taking the baby sheep, the lambs, and he was grinding up some of the plant material and having these lambs bottle fed, which is just a little, tiny little taste of it. And as time went on, he would increase the amount of that taste inside the milk that they were drinking. And he gave this small population of sheep an affinity, a taste for this plant, and they now liked it. Now you had a population of sheep that could be sent off to a ranch. So say you're a rancher and you have a problem with this specific plant and no one else, your sheep, your cattle are not feeding on it. This population of sheep would go in there and begin to feed. And I don't want to say exclusively, but they love that plant. So it's a really unique, again, you think about, I mean, oh, we're talking biological controls because right away, the world and many of you out there, I mean, we're the organic gardeners on staff here. Many of you may be spraying chemicals in your lawn. Well, there are biological controls. And how cool was this control? And they are now creating, because this was successful, other populations of sheep that will actually feed on, you know, specific plants. So we do have alternatives to, you know, spraying chemicals. During this time, and I'll just talk to you a little bit about the sagebrush steppe out there. I saw, because you, most of you would say a forest fire. Well, these are called range fires. I saw a range fire grow from 10 acres and in a couple of days go up to 40,000 acres. Think about that. I was able to interview some of the firefighters and the smoke jumpers, the guys who were actually landing in there. And it was an amazing thing to see how fires are battled. And it really, it does become a battle. Sometimes it's just, we talk about biological controls and controls of plants and animals. Sometimes the firefighters simply have to control and contain a fire. And it took days, and then it took weeks, but they were able to extinguish this fire. And these are the few courageous, brave people we have in the country. I always talk to you about our police and firefighters, all of our first responders and what they do. Now, another cool story that's out there, and I, again, unless you've lived some of these things, you would never experience it like I'm talking to you about the rain falling. So the sagebrush steppe, because it's dry out there, one of the first nights I shower up and I'm shaving, put the shaving cream on my face, and I begin to shave. And this is not an exaggeration. It was so dry there. By the time I got to the second half of my face, the shaving cream was dried like crust on my face. So I realized from then on, I needed to put half face with shaving cream, shave it, then put half face with shaving cream, shave it. Because again, we have to adapt too. So I just thought that, you know, you'd want to, you know, just a little cool little, okay, because you know I am a man of stories everywhere I travel around the country. Now, we've got to do something, and here's the example going back to, I guess I should talk about the topic of the day, the invasive species. We have to do something about unwanted exotic pets because too many times, especially in inner cities, people want to just discard them. And again, we find them in abandoned buildings, all this. Well, think about this. In the past 5 years, two fishermen caught piranha in the Delaware River. And these were on separate occasions. And you think about piranha are, you know, pretty much exclusive to the equator and warmer waters. And we're talking about the Delaware River where some of it will freeze, I don't want to say solid, but freezes very thick. So some animals, plants, they have the ability of adapting. So we need to be very careful with those exotic species. Now, many of you see a bamboo-looking plant near waterways. And some people have said to me, oh, man, that looks really pretty. No, ain't wrong. It's the Japanese knotweed. It's way of out-competing the native plants is by dropping tens of thousands of seeds. And when you see this plant, and no joke, you will see it in an area, and then you'll come back the next year, and you're going, wow, it grew, and it grew amazingly, and it is out-competing so many of the native plants along our waterways. And some people said to me, so what's the big deal? So you got a new plant. Well, let's go back to the other native plants. What happens if there was an insect on that native plant that was feeding on that plant? And then what happens if there was another insect feeding on it, another bird? So obviously what I'm talking about now is the food chain. And now the Japanese actually outcompetes a plant, and that plant's gone. And now the native food chain is now missing from an area. So again, there are reasons why we need to control these. And I'm going to tell you that and I'll just talk about the Northeast. Waterways along the Northeast, everywhere I find Japanese knotweed. And just so you know, that my home, when I had moved into here, I have a beautiful old home built in the 1920s, Southwest. Think about this, Southwest home in the Northeast. Sort of doesn't fit in, but in my life it does. Beautiful property. And when I moved in and there are no wetlands in my backyard, there was Japanese knotweed growing in my backyard. So the easiest way for me to eradicate it is to dig it up. And I'm telling you, I would dig it up so it's not reproducing by seed. And the next year, there was more Japanese knotweed. And some of the root and the rhizome growing underground, it must have been left, and it came back up. And it probably took me about 5 or 6 years to eradicate it. And that was just like by my manly digging skills. But again, seriously, in a serious sense, just to get rid of it. And that's in a non-wetland area. And the Japanese knotweed is known for growing in water areas, wetland areas. Now, there's another beautiful flower that you will see across the country called the purple loosestrife. And people go, man, and I'm telling you, so as one of my degrees is in botany, and I'm saying, as a botanist, it is a beautiful purple flower in late summer, but it's out competing our native plants. Now, we need to be careful of this, and I'll give you another one. We have the invasion of the stink bug. And in recent years, it's cost local farmers over $35,000 in damage. You say, well, that's not a big number compared to all farmers. But you know what? For that local farmer, this is a tremendous amount of money. This insect could decimate his crop. So, you know, here's the deal. We've identified many invasive plant and animal species today. And on another show, I'll cover, because again, the topic will not end and it will go on. And again, it is now controlling. If we can eradicate, that's a great thing, but it's controlling. But I will, on another show, discuss zebra mussels, kudzu, the northern snakehead, and many more. But as an environmental voice, we must band together to protect and preserve this great country of ours. Until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. That was awesome.